Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Treehouse, episode 50, our 1,000th show, with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
Look at that, 1,000 shows there, Peps, and congratulations to the audience for sticking with us, and for those who are still ploughing their way through the early episodes. It'll fly by. 1,000 shows, you can do it in a month. Welcome, everybody. Here we go again, with another 2 hours of fun for old and young, without the slightest hint of vulgarity. And it's a red-letter day in many, many ways. Perhaps I understand your parents have been married for not a thousand years, but their anniversary, am I right?
My dad is nodding sagely, going, it feels like a thousand
no.
years. It's my parents' golden wedding anniversary today.
Is
and, of course,
it?
All plans off because of coronavirus and the shocking weather. Mm. So,
we've had two murky days, the shocking weather. It's been like the Sahara for the previous 10 weeks. Shocking
well, that adds to it.
So yeah, I suppose
we're allowed
so.
To go and sit in their garden, but we'd have to, you know, wear sou'westers. So, but yes,
and 50
years. D-Day indeed.
Well,
and actually, my parents' wedding is the only reason my mum has been on the radio was to talk to you. Because for my parents' wedding, my nan dyed her gloves to match her green outfit,
yes.
her costume.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And some point during either the ceremony or afterwards, she went to take them off and discovered she had dyed her hands bright green.
Yeah.
Hot day. She'd sweated into them. She had Kermit hands. Yeah. And had to leave the gloves on for the entire day.
It doesn't happen as much as it used to. Jeans used to do that a lot. If you go out in the jeans
yes.
in the rain, you come home, there's the old blue legs, and you look down, okay. I found it not unamusing. I used to like that. Except my mum used to say, well, have a bath before you go to bed. I'm not having that all over the sheets. I didn't like doing that. But look, we are not a show that just prattles and rambles. Leaves a gap there for the audience to take a sharp intake of breath. Honestly, I just wanted to pay tribute there to 50 years. Wendy and I are only 10 years behind that. But I'll get through this.
Ruby? Are you Ruby this year?
No idea. I've no idea. I think there's only really the 25 and 50. Everything else is a racket, isn't it? Paper and cork or whatever they are. But welcome, everybody. And what we always do in the beginning is, of course, shine a torch into the more shadowy parts of On This Day that the mainstream media, the lamestream media, tend to overlook. It's quite a big thing for Benjamin Franklin. So Benjamin Franklin, you know Benjamin Franklin, right? He's the founding father of America and all the pushing of Benjamin Franklin. Why am I asking you that? But Benjamin Franklin, see, here's what happens. I looked up, Benjamin Franklin, and immediately I'm distracted from the core subject by finding out his dad, Benjamin Franklin's dad, who's English, was a chandler. He was a candle maker.
Ah!
Now, I know people think, hello, we're going to go to Amazon to look at some candle reviews. We're not. I refuse to be that predictable. But his dad was a candle maker. And in them days, in the 18th century, candle makers went door to door, not selling candles, but if you any fat you may have saved, they would make a candle there and then for you.
Bring out your fat.
They would add a little wick to it. That's what people did. Oi, don't chuck that fat away. Don't. That's a nice candle, that is. And you know, Benjamin Franklin's father.
They're all like dripping. I mean, in some ways that would be.
Well, we've sort of come full circle because I must confess I did look at candles on Amazon, but there's hundreds and hundreds of pages of them, you can imagine. But I did notice down in the lower end of it, you can now buy edible wax candles. Now, why would you want an edible wax candle? Why would you go to someone's house, see, you know, lit like a sting video, and then look around at them and say, oh, you eating that candle, you finished with it, and then just pick it up, nom, nom, edible candles.
Maybe like a sort of a fondue arrangement? Would you dip into the...
They're on there, edible candles. But they're coming a long way now from Benjamin Franklin's father knocking on the door and saying, bring out your fat. But the problem is always the wick, and they couldn't get that going for ages. And the phrase gets on my wick. You don't know that anymore. Mm. It gets on your wick. Here's the thing with the candles, Peps. And the other
week... I thought that was to do with candles. Sorry.
You get on me wick? I suppose so. Suppose so. But the other week we were talking about the candle snuffers. And that's when we examined eBay. But the little wick, when you do blow a candle out, they've not yet mastered that, have they? Because you go back the next day and it's underneath.
Oh, when
it's melted wax and it's gone hard to wax, and you have to dig it out, and then it won't light. So Benjamin Franklin.
Those little fairy light ones, or whatever you call them, the tea light, sorry. Yeah. They're the ones that they never get to more than halfway down.
And then they're sunk in their own mire. But looking at Benjamin Franklin, he invented loads of things. Bifocals, Benjamin Franklin. The Franklin stove. The Franklin flexible urinary catheter, if you don't mind. I'm sorry about that. I know. But also the glass harmonica. The glass harmonica. Now, it's a huge... You know, like when you see... You don't see them anymore because the world's turned in a weird direction. But quite often, you might see people on underground stations. Not on underground stations. In fact, you never, ever saw them, Elmore, I think about it. But people playing wine glasses.
Oh, yes. On a sort of a talent show on telly.
That's it. That's
what
I meant.
When you normally saw them.
Underground talent shows. Can you do that with the wine glass?
No, I think because I only buy cheap IKEA ones, but I think I have been. I think you have to have proper glass, don't you? I think I have been to a dinner party, uh-huh. No middle class, where everyone started doing that.
Well, I was going to say in a restaurant when the meal's over and you're nicely alight. There's only two things to do. One is take those amaretto biscuit wrappers and make them fly up into the air by lighting them. That's a great thing to do. And the other thing is to try and play the wine glass. And Benjamin Franklin saw this. And he immediately made the glass harmonica, which is like loads of wine glasses stuffed together, and then you play them.
I was picturing a mouth organ.
No, it's nothing. It's actually, if I might for a second, it's actually harmonica, which is based on the Italian word for harmony. But there you go. But here, if the magic of editing allows, here is they sound very ethereal, and you'll know the sound when you hear it. So it should come up now. So that's what they sound like. But the thing about Benjamin Franklin, what's the other thing we know about Benjamin Franklin, Peps? And we'll start the show, I promise you, right on the other side of this. What do we know about him?
The Franklin Mint? Is that anything to do with
him? No, that's the Franklin Mint. No, I don't. Although you say Franklin Mint, I'm so sorry, everyone. We are going to get right down to this any second. Polo, I'm afraid this is how the mind works. The Polo Club was formed in New York City. One of the things I wrote down, the Polo Club, not the mint, the game, which nobody understands. Do you know what polo is? I mean, you know what it is.
Horses, croquet, isn't it? But more or less.
Isn't it just charging around hitting the ball? Now, apparently there's rules to it and there's a plan to it, but anyway. But the Polo Club founded today in 1890. And immediately I looked it up, but it's so complicated, polo. It's the biggest pitch in the world. But polo mints, now we're talking, ain't we? They were called polo mints because they were originally named, or going to be named, polar, like ice and cold.
Oh, of course, yes.
And they became polo. They nicked it off of Lifesavers in America. And polos have been, they've been butterscotch over the years, don't like those fruit flavour ones. I remember
the lemon mint ones, yeah.
Was there?
Yes, when I was at university.
Mini ones, they did little tiny ones for a while. Oh, they did, little tiny ones. And they always come in that very tightly wrapped aluminium, and 23 a pack, I remember that. for me, they're the number one breath mint, because that's what they were done for. Number one, well over Mintos or Dentine or Tic Tacs. Don't talk to me about them. Anyway, where were we? Victory V. No, Oh, no, sorry.
Franklin. The one other thing about Franklin, which clearly
he flew a kite to test it. Didn't he? He flew a kite into a thunderstorm.
Yes.
Which became a staple of all cartoons.
At home.
All cartoons always have Benjamin Franklin flying his kite, and then it's hit by lightning. And as we know, when you're hit by lightning in a cartoon, you go to a skeleton, then back again, then skeleton, then back again, then skeleton, then back again. But he did that. He put a key on a kite, and he drew sparks from the storm. If you know what I mean, he put them in a he had a jar at the bottom by the key.
Yes, I remember this.
Little tiny lightning bolt. The thing is, nobody knows why. It's a tremendous act. It's a great act. You've got to wait for a thunderstorm. But nobody knows quite why he did it. But what a racket. And here we go, everyone. What are we doing today, Peps?
We are doing Have You Ever Lived Out a Film Scene or Song Lyric?
Got some great ones on that.
Lying about injuries, and how did you find out your parents weren't millionaires?
No.
And every other topic that's still rolling.
Every year there are thousands of them. Here we are on the thousandth show. Just before we move on there, Peps, these things like Victory V's and Fisherman Friends, just revolting, am I right? Absolutely revolting.
Yes.
They are absolutely revolting. Anyone
My dad used to have a pack of tin called Imps.
Oh, Imps. No, Imps is all right. Them tiny, tiny little... Oh, no,
the tiny little... He used to have them for choir.
Tiny
little.
And
they would open his throat up.
I like things that
come in. Yes,
a
little slidey tin.
Oh, a little slidey tin. No, but your Fisherman Friend and your Victory V. I think there's not a member of the listening audience now who says, oh, I like a Victory V. Just... disgusting. And I'm happy to report, I looked these up once, it says on the their information site, it says... Victory V no longer contain chloroform. No longer contain chloroform. They were knockout drops, or something like it.
Yeah, they sound more tempting, but...
They're an acquired taste, but don't talk to me about Fisherman Friends and Victory V. Give me something from over there, Peps. Let's get the show rolling.
Well, let's go from Benjamin Franklin and his kite to fireworks. So this is great perks of your parents' jobs. My dad, Ron Rapley, had fantastic jobs over the years that we benefited from every year. When I was a boy in the 80s, we moved from London to the remote Peak District town of Buxton, where my dad changed role from working at the Woolwich Arsenal to the mines research part of the MOD.
The what?
The mines research.
Mining or like explosive mines?
Explosives.
Oh.
His role was in commercial explosives and testing any and all potentially harmful explosive materials that came into the country. Wide range of things he would have to test all year round. Bullets, shotgun cartridges.
Wow.
And of particular interest to a prepubescent boy, caps for toy guns.
Oh, right.
And an endless supply of snap bangs that were ideal for sneakily putting under the leg of a teacher's chair.
What is a snap bang?
They were the ones wrapped in paper.
Yes, I haven't thought about those for a very long while.
They just threw down.
And they gave a minor but very pleasing bang.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. Oh, I'll look those up once we finish this.
I digress. My dad ended up as the research and development director of British Standard Fireworks, now Black Cat, which meant we had fireworks all year round. Mm. Every family occasion, wedding, birthday, anniversary, fireworks to set off. And now the crux of the story, bonfire night.
Mm.
Dad would bring home bountiful supplies of fireworks, but not just any fireworks, next year's prototypes.
Oh,
every year, he'd let them off in the back garden and we would have to give feedback on colour, size, noise and smile factor of every firework so he could take him back to work. However, we also had a nearby neighbour about a third of a mile up the road who every year bought enough fireworks to thrill a small country to try and outdo my dad's. He'd never met my dad, but clearly spent huge sums of cash buying fireworks for the family to try and outdo them. Every November the 5th, my dad would rub his hands a la Del Boy and state, well, I hope he tries to beat me again because it's more profit for us. He never, ever did. By the way, he also ended up as Rocket Ron, presenting a first virtual radio fireworks show for Terry Wogan.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, you know,
love Alan.
We are few, we happy band on radio know that fireworks is tremendous. The only one, a few times I've ever lost control on the radio and started giving them, because it's, as usual, these slight subjects require tremendous gravity. Somebody asked me on the radio, what is the perfect accompaniment to red wine? And I remember saying fireworks. And it hit me as such an absurd thing that I don't sound self-regarding nonsense, but I went entirely. And even when you mentioned fireworks then, I thought, the perfect accompaniment to red wine. And that's how they remain. I'll go through a couple of three that have been on the ball here for quite a while. This is, extraordinary reasons you were given the name. And Sarah's in touch and said, my dad was born in Willersley Castle in Cromford, Derbyshire, 1941. It was the maternity hospital in World War II. As a result, my dad's middle name is Willersley. And my brother's middle name is Willersley. And his son's middle name is Willersley. I went back there a few years ago to look at their records, and we were able to go into the room that he was born in. Isn't that something? Going into the room your dad was born in. That's a beautiful thing, as opposed to going into the room your dad was conceived in. So there's that, and there's a tremendous one about made-up illnesses. This is from Anne. And Anne says, my dad used to call any ailment the Ippery Pip. What's the matter with you? You've got the Ippery Pip. And as I remember, the cure for any Ippery Pip was Lucozade and Heinz cream of chicken soup. Yes, that is a
standard.
There's probably some sense in that. Something from over there, perhaps.
This is from Clive in West Wickham. The world's dullest job and possibly breaking things in a shop. Ahoy, hoy. I think I can possibly cover two topics at a stretch with this. Back in the 70s and at the tender age of 15, my first Saturday job was at a record shop in Oxford Street. Now, I'm not going to name it, and then we'll see if you can name it.
I can name it already.
It was a large basement store with a little stand outside on the street with record sleeves to show what was on sale down the dingy-looking staircase. This is the reason he said be careful around owning it, naming it. Maybe we will at the end. The shop was owned by an intimidating father and son who argued like cat and dog most of the day. And on one occasion turning up for work, we were handed a length of 4x2 and told, if some blokes come piling down the stairs, hit them with this, which, as a skinny 15-year-old, is not what you want to hear. All of the albums were cheap imports from Portugal. More often than not, had two side ones or two side twos rather than the usual side one and two. Probably worth a fortune now. Anyway, one job we hated. As the records were out live, we had to pass them through the shrink wrap machine, sealing the album sleeve in the clear plastic wrapper-like cling film. He had to place the album on one end of a conveyor, loosely seal the plastic round the sleeve by pulling down a bar, then send it through the machine, which used heat to shrink it to a tight fit, ready for the racks.
It's like the last week we were talking about, you can do that with crisp packets, can't you, in the grill? Yes, we were.
So every week or so, there was a huge delivery and we had to spend hours shrink-wrapping all the albums. This tedious task saved especially for our Saturday staff. Tedious, that is, until my mate and co-worker Rupert discovered if you held the actual record in the shrink-wrap machine for a minute or two, the vinyl itself went soft. This was 1976. Punk was on the march and Rupert and I were proto-punks. Each week, we turned up a little more punk than the previous, with piercings, shaved hair, and T-shirts more ripped. In our tiny world, any piece of music longer than 2 minutes or more than three chords was to be despised. ABBA's new album, Arrival, has released, and we got a huge delivery of hundreds of them, and we hatched a plan to show our contempt for the boss, for ABBA, and for shrink wrapping.
They shrink it? Did they shrink it?
We held every other piece of vinyl in the machine until it was soft and then bit it, leaving a full set of teeth marks. Replaced it in the sleeve, properly shrink-wrapped it.
That's wrong.
The racks.
No, I mean, no, all
right. Needless to say, next Saturday, father and son went completely, and I mean completely, bananas.
They yelled
at us for a good 10 minutes, demanding to know if it was us, and terrified as we were, we denied it. The son then pulled out a lump of dental wax to take our dental impressions and match them to the bite marks in the returned records from irate customers. We refused, and to our surprise, kept our jobs. I feel rather ashamed of myself thinking back.
quite right.
I quite like ABBA. That's Clive.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's a tremendous bit of fun. And I do recall those stores that used to be downstairs.
Well, I can tell you. Do you want to know the name of it?
No, I don't know. I mean, Virgin used to be opposite them.
Virgin
used to be opposite them. And they used to be above a shoe shop in London's Oxford Street. There used to be Shelley's Shoes. And you go to the back and there was a cardboard. This is about 73, 74. There'll be a cardboard sign saying Virgin Records with an arrow upstairs. You pull aside this curtain, you walk up these threadbare stairs, and there was a room above it that was Virgin Records upstairs there. And it was in exactly the same place where the megastore later, I'm sure Richard Branson did it on purpose, bought the entire block and turned it into a megastore. It used to be upstairs there, and they had bootlegs on the wall. I did a thing with Richard Branson once, and I said, I bought so many bootlegs. He said, we never, ever sold illegal bootlegs. Richard, you're talking to me now. I think you personally sold me Deep Purple's H-bomb. that would have been opposite them. But, and I promise we'll move on to other things, that's a lot of fun, that job, by the sound of it. Qualifying it, because it was supposed to be the dullest job. Let me bring you Angie. Angela here gets in touch. Whenever we watch programmes indoors, like Inside the Factory, there's always a monotonous process that requires no brain power. And my husband usually says, can you imagine doing that all day? And I have to give him a look, which he always says, oh, yes, of course, you did. After leaving school, I did a YTS for a year on £18.25 a week, then worked in a newsagent's, from where I got a job in a meatpacking factory that produced bacon and ham for the major supermarkets. For the first day, starters were put on the conveyor belt, straightening the bacon. Yes, you heard me, bacon straightening. The person on the slicing, top job, will put a side of bacon in the machine with a huge blade going at 500 RPM, and it would cut and drop onto a conveyor belt, which would then pause, then move, then pause, then move, and just make it go like shingles, like roof tiles hanging over each other. If the bacon was frozen, then straightening wasn't needed. But if it had softened a bit, you had to be on your game. However, on the dial scale, it's between 1 and 2. You kept your fingers together, straightened them as if you were going to clap, and then put your hands and patted the neat stack. I should add, my brain was kept in my locker for the 8-hour shift. Thankfully, one day I progressed from straightening, but I'm sure there are people who have done that for 10 years. I did work there for 10 years, doing every job on the bacon lines, on the gammons and the hams, and eventually escaped to go to work in a museum. Then I became a pub licensee, and now I'm the ticketing manager at Sail Sharks. But those bacon days still make me shudder. I hope that's dull enough for you. Thank you, Angela. How about that?
A bacon straightener. Broad career, Angela.
Now, perhaps when we were talking just before we come on, because we do thorough tests on this program, on most of the shows I've done, and these will return when the lights go out on again all over the world. For instance, we used to do the Dying Toys. People who know the Saturday show knows probably the, other than the sausage sandwich game, our most popular item was, have you got a toy where the batteries are running out, and we'll get all those back together again. But Pat still has an eye that never sleeps, and more importantly, an ear that never sleeps. And tell us the story of this, Pat. What was it?
So my friend Mark put on Facebook yesterday that they were having to call an emergency electrician around because they were having issues with their extractor in their bathroom. So let's now...
This is before it comes out, I'll have to send the link and we'll put it on another show because it was so clunky getting it up on the screen. But I enjoyed every single moment of it coming up on the screen. And it's an extractor, is it, everybody?
Yes, it's a bathroom extractor.
Whatever you're doing, if you're driving, pull over to the side of the road. If you're knocking around, clearing up indoors, just take a second here, because now this is why we stand head and shoulders above, I'm saying, all other podcasts. Because here comes Pepsi's friend's extractor. When you go in the bathroom and turn on the light, you are greeted with this soothing noise. Off you go, Peps. Now, you see, and isn't that a thing of beauty and a joy forever? I'll be absolutely honest with you. I couldn't hear it at my end, Peps. I couldn't hear it.
No,
but the echo of when I heard it earlier on will live with me forever. And you know what? Should we ever run out of things to say, audience roll eyes, I think that sound effect, alongside our foghorn and various other things, is exactly what we should be in the market for.
It does actually sound like Charlie Brown's teacher. On the phone, that is cartoon phone is actually what it is.
And the terrible thing is, you know, I'm not suggesting that there's anything to be ashamed of by tiptoeing off to the bathroom during a little gathering. But some people are a bit sensitive about it. And you might think, perhaps they'll think I've gone to get something or, you know, to look out the window or even for a walk. But as soon, it's bad enough, the toilet flush. But as soon as that comes on, everyone looks at each other and goes, yeah, gone to the carsy. But that now becomes number one in our sound effects library. If you want to send anything to the treehouse at somethingelse.com, a little soundbite of something, we do enjoy the sounds of the real world. Just before we take a break, this is from Gary. This is the world's longest DIY job. He sent these photographs in, which we can put on Instagram. I had the pleasure of modernizing the garden. I boasted I would do it. I started this on the 20th of April, 2018. As you can see by the attached photos, it's still some way from being finished as I write this on the 4th of June, 2020. It is nowhere near finished. He's got bits of decking here and he's got holes dug there and he's got some turf to lay there. It is, but as far as we know, that 2 year stretch, 2 years, 2 months, Britain's longest unfinished DIY. But he adds a PS. You might like to know this. As a kid in primary school, I had a couple of days off to go to London, 73, 74. I went with my mum. When I got back, my friends asked me what I'd got up to in London. I don't know why, but I told them I went to see Top of the Pops being made. I said the Wombles were on, but one of them got ill and I had to get in the suit and help finish the recording. Well, as it happens, the Wombles were on Top of the Pops that week. I reigned supreme for a while. That's me, that one there. And it's actually Christmas.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a lovely story. Right, we'll take a break, and when we return, more of the hoopla.
Imagine a world just like our own, but importantly, not our own. Is it the alternate dimension, or are we? And does it have podcasts?
The Last Post.
Hi, I'm Alice Fraser, bringing you daily news from a parallel universe. It's a sweet, sweet dose of satirical news coverage, some of which will sound pretty familiar.
He defended him, saying he broke the lockdown rules on a father's instinct. And I just think if Boris had shielded his as much as he's shielding Cummings, he might actually be in a position to give parenting tips.
And some of it is just pretty weird.
Air in space is becoming much clearer, Alice. And it's quite shocking because there is no air in space. It's empty space.
So join me every single day alongside great comedians from around the world, including Andy Zaltzman, Nish Kumar, Tiff Stevenson, and Will Anderson. Good luck to you.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Danny Baker Show, radiating out across the airwaves. Come the sunshine or the rain, come aboard the Danny train. We'll kick our slippers off and throw our cares away. What better thing to do than have a jolly jape or two? Don't touch that dial, there's nowhere else to go. Come and join a happy session, wave ta-ta to the recession on the Danny Baker Show.
Take it away, Danny.
That's very soothing. I know some people, a groundswell of the audience might be saying, oh, we're not going to have to put up with that every 5 minutes, are we? Yes, you're going to have to put up with that every 5 minutes. So I'm going to put an instruction over to Phil Wilding, who's producing. So Phil, no matter where we are, play that in every 5 minutes. But it's up to the audience to come up with better effects than that, by the way. So welcome back to the show. And if you're wondering what's the focus of this program, it has no focus. We are the stupid, shallow cousin of dark, edgy box sets, and that's how it works over here. So now, a few weeks back, it seems like 1,000 years ago, we did the very last ever, don't run, we did the very last ever vinyl golden shot from this room I broadcast from, which is my record room, and there's 11,000 albums and 6,000 singles in front of me, and it baffles the sound nicely. And we had this game. Perhaps you remember this game, don't you?
Did we call it?
It never really got a proper name, but it's the vinyl golden shot. And what I did, I said, I'll stick my finger out, and then somebody can come and join us and guide my finger by saying left a bit, up a bit, down a bit, over a bit, and they get to pick two albums blindly and one single, and then we add up the value of them, and that's a little game. However, it is so hard with headphones on in a room which I've put this, what we might call a studio, and boxes and a desk and everything else amongst the records. And I nearly died on the air. Laughing down asleep, but you saw. I was, that's when we started putting the disclaimer on it. I had to sign the new contract that said guaranteed satisfaction or the autopsy's free. But here I am.
It was Hannah who broke us, wasn't it, dear Hannah?
Anyway, the point is, there's been something of an online petition to get it back. Now, whether people just want to hear me struggling again, I don't know. But we're going to now welcome our friend Steve. Steve.
Hello,
Steve.
Hi, Danny. I'm here.
Thank you for being there, Steve. You're a test monkey for this because depending how this goes, is whether we do it again. Maybe I'll do one of those Twitter polls. But I'm taking all the energy out of it anyway, aren't I? Here's how it stands. We've done seven of these. Dave is in seventh place. He only picked up £57 worth of vinyl. The great Danny Kelly is in sixth place. It's £70. Sam, £145. Hannah, £190 in three picks. Peter, £310. Then Anne Pugh, £330, and Christine is at number one with £335 done from a couple of things I need to ask you before we start. But what do you stand on Victory V lozenges or Fisherman's Friends? What do you think about those, Steve?
I prefer Marmite, actually, to be honest, than those.
They're the most revolting things, aren't they? They're like, they're like a tombstone with Vicks inhaler poured all over it. And you've got to somehow slather yourself around that. Polo mint. You like a polo mint, though, don't you?
Oh, polo mint. Yeah. Excellent polo mint. Fruit polos, actually.
No, we won't fall out over that. But the great thing about polo is they have the word polo embossed on them twice. It's very clean on the tongue. if they were just smooth, I'm not saying, but the fact they've got polo and polo. The only other thing I think that does that, Steve, and we'll get onto the game in a second, is your Kit Kat, which when it had the foil on it, you could rub and the Kit Kat would come through. You'd rub the,
the
packaging. No, of course you can't do that now because it's in some kind of a safety packet. But rubbing that and then running your tongue around the words polo, if anyone knows, I'm not including soaps here, any other embossed sweets, we would love to hear from you. And one last thing, because it's Benjamin Franklin's, the day he flew his kite into the storm, Steve. Lightning. Good. I'm terrified of lightning. You know he did that, by the way, but everyone knows that about him. Lightning. You like a storm or are you terrified of them?
No, I don't mind, but my wife is scared witless out with storms. Yeah, but I don't mind. Yeah.
You don't mind?
I'm fine.
I holiday in Florida, the lightning capital of the world. I can't. I have to pull the curtains and
stick. No.
I do. Well, people always say this. Sorry, Steve, we'll get right to the game. People always say this, Peps, but the reason is that it can kill you. It's not like something irrational. It's not like, I don't like stairs. They can kill you. Lightning kills. And then the thunder. No, I can't bear lightning. My nan will get it from. She used to hide all the knives and forks in storms. She thought it attracted lightning. So, Steve, where do your musical tastes lie? What do you think? Where is your music?
Me? Well, I Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. I'm a big fan of Beach Boys and Brian Wilson. I know lots about them. I just love them. I've been back to the start.
Isn't it tremendous, by the way, what was the lost period of the Beach Boys, 68 to 72, is now recognised as an absolute apex. All those albums like Sunflower, 2020, but of course Holland and all of those. Even Smiley's now, because they were for ages. Everyone said they've lost it. The Beach Boys have gone, but they're tremendous. Even Carl and the Passions, side two of Carl and the Passions. Wow. Anyway,
they're all good. No, they're absolutely. I totally agree. I'm mad on it all. But Sparks as well, because in '73 when I was at school, some bloke played that over the a trip. We were up to the Imperial War Museum, and the coach driver played this town over there, and I thought, that's unbelievable.
Coach driver did that? Wow.
Yeah, he did, and Everyone, all my mates said, "Well, that's rubbish." And I thought, "Wow, I've got to get into this." Yeah. And I've been a Sparks fan ever since.
And a terrific gentleman, and of course, still very much, very, very active. It was Benjamin Franklin who first collected Sparks. I'm just freeforming here. He flew his kite with a key on it. We were talking about this in the first half of the show. The other audience have already heard this, but Steve and I are just talking now. He flew a kite with a key on it. And from the key, he collected sparks in a jar.
I'm sure they've made a song about it.
They must have done. Last thing, I had a very abrasive friend, no-nonsense friend, when I worked at the NME, named Monty. And we went to the Top of the Pops one. And I like Sparks, but during rehearsal, everyone was standing around. And he looked at Russell. Russell's the short moustache one. I always get them mixed up.
No, that's Ron. Yeah.
No, but if you look on the earlier albums, they both had a moustache. Oh, I won't be talking about that. Of course it's Ron. So he's there. Ron was in his full pomp, and he's got the early Sparks look, and he was standing there with his arms folded. And moment Monty looked at him, and Ron looked at Monty, and Ron thought, "I don't like the way this fella's looking at me," but we're all watching some other band rehearse. And Ron Mayall said to my friend Monty, "You taking a good look, pal? You okay, pal?" And Monty just went to him. Monty went to him, "How old are you?" And all of a sudden, poor old Ron thought, "Hey, look, I'm in show business. I dress like this." He just went to him, "How old are you?" He also asked the same question Robert Smith once as well. Look, we're getting nowhere here. You understand how this game might be played here. Steve, I'm going to... I made a mistake last time of carrying the microphone with us. If suddenly if I become difficult to hear, it's a bonus. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to place this way. You're going to pick two albums blindly here, and the Sparks albums are actually behind me, so we'll do that in a second.
Ooh.
I'm pointing at the albums. They're not worth very much money. Well, no, the first one is when they were called Half Nelson. If you get the Sparks album,
yeah, yeah.
Half Nelson. So I'm pointing here vaguely at the Moby Grape albums. I don't know if you know Moby Grape.
Yes, I've heard of them. Yeah.
Do you know why they're called Moby Grape? Why were Moby Grape called? At school, Skip Spence, I think, when he was at school, and one of the other band, their favourite joke was, "What's huge and purple and lives in the sea? Moby Grape." And that was their favourite joke, and that's why the band are called Moby Grape. Anyway, we're getting absolutely nowhere here. That's absolutely true. So here we go. Sparks used to be called Half Nelson. So so I'm pointing straight ahead. You guide me. You can take as long as you like. It's a podcast, you know. We've got no the audience.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. So I'm pointing straight ahead. You can say up, down, left, right, and I'll see what album you choose. Off you go.
Thank you. But you've reminded me with the golden shot anyway that about Guzzle Grub. But maybe you've got a story about that another day.
Maybe tell us it straight afterwards. Here we go. Go.
Okay, let's go up a bit.
Okay.
Stop.
Yep.
Left.
Right.
Stop.
Yep.
Down. Stop. Right. Fire.
Oh, he's very decisive.
Yeah, very. I like that. And it's an album by a group that sprang from Yes. Peter Banks went and formed a group called Flash. Their albums are on Sovereign. And this is the second Flash album called Out of Our Hands. It's a prog rock album from, I think, 72. You don't see it a lot. I'm saying that's in mint condition as well. I'm saying that's on a good day, and I'm going to give you 75 quid for that.
Ooh.
Now, it's not a bad start. £75.
Really?
But, I mean, people might say, pick it up for 30. That's a mint condition copy of Flash's album. Now I'm turning round. Now I'm turning around. Off you go.
Can I go downwards?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, down. Stop.
Yep.
Left.
Right.
Left.
Yeah.
Left.
Yeah.
Up. Yeah. Up. Stop.
Yeah.
Fire.
No. You another. If you'd have carried on going left, you'd have hit Sparks. But I'm afraid. Great album, though it is. I know. Great album, though it is. It's Paul Simon's "There Goes Rhyming Simon." A wonderful album, possibly his masterpiece. But I'm even in mint condition. You're only getting 20 quid for that. So you're up to nine. Great album. What were you near? Hang on. If you'd have gone left a little bit, you'd have hit the Stooges albums and the Stooges albums.
Oh, blimey.
The British copy is £300-£500 a pop. Oh. You didn't.
No. Right.
The singles now, and then we're done. Point you straight at the singles. There's some money in here, so off you go.
No, sorry, you just reminded me of Sad of the Century. This is what you would have won.
This is what, no, yes.
Anyway.
You get a decent single, you might.
Let's take the 3-2-1, wasn't it? Should we have take your pick, did they? Always. Come and let's go and see what you would have won. When they used to take the 25 quid, because they'd never seen so much money in 1964, they take the 25 quid and they missed out on the Bubble Caravan. Although.
Oh, no.
How old are you, Steve? How old are you, Steve?
I'm just a couple of years younger than you. I'm 60.
Well, you know, take your pick with Michael Miles, surely you do.
I do. I used to watch it at my grandmother's, yeah.
And the yes-no interlude with the fellow with the gong, has there ever been more exciting television? Never mind about this.
Absolutely not. I tell my mother-in-law, whenever she says to me, do you want something to eat? Do you want something to eat? No, so I'll open the box. She doesn't have a clue.
And of course, the thing is, Michael Miles, we'll carry on with the other game in a minute. It's been thrown in a sharp release by this. And he used to stand there, Michael Miles, and they would win the key to whatever box they wanted to say, yeah, I want to open box 13. That was the big one, wasn't it? With the question marks all over it.
Yeah.
And he would say, yeah. Right, you've got the key to box 13. Can I buy it off you? No, you can't. How about if I offer you £10? Put £10 in his hands. I'm offering you £15. He'd fan the out, but hang on, that's 15, 64. I'm offering you 5, 10, and he'd turn it down, and then he'd say, you're turning down £25 to open box 13. Now, let's go and see what's in it. Walk across the studio, put the key into box 13. They'd open it, and it'd be a booby prize. He'd say, want an old sock for when you put your foot in it. Oh, well, you've been a great sport, and off they'd go. Right, I'm pointing at the singles now.
okay.
Where you go? Go on.
Singles, all right. I'm hoping for Green Vinyl, John and Yoko. Happy Christmas,
it's in here, yep. Got that now. No one will believe it. Go on.
We're going to go right now. Right. Stop.
Yep.
Stop. Up. Yep. Stop. Right. Yep. Stop. Up. Stop. Fire.
That's good.
Okay.
Hang on. That's good.
Happy Christmas. War is over.
No, it isn't. No, you were about 3 inches away from the Bowies, but you were in the T-Rexes, and some of the T-Rexes go big, but not this particular one, I'm afraid. It's T-Rexes 1973 minor hit Truck on Tyke. Oh, you want an old sock for when you put your foot in it.
I recall that one anyway. That's a nice thing to recall.
Yeah, it's not a bad haul. But if you'd have gone a little bit further across and you're into the Tyrannosaurus Rex singles, then we're talking a couple of 300. But anyway, you've got there, I think I gave you a tenner on that, 75, 80, 95.
Two and six.
That puts you in fifth place. So thank you very much indeed, Steve. And, you know, half Nelson and Sparks and Moby Grape. At least we bonded over that.
Steve. Yes, Steve.
Thank you for being with
us. Thank you very much. Nice to speak to you.
And you.
Thank you.
Bless you.
Bye-bye.
Here's the thing, Peps. That was a painless version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the audience, maybe, but for me it was. That was a pretty painless version of it.
He was very decisive. That's the style we want. Up, left, down, fire.
And also he seemed to enjoy the game, which is not always the way. So if ever you get in touch with us, my Twitter feed, of course, is Prognose on Twitter. And I often put up the details of the show, and Phil always has to say, leave a phone number, because after I put the subjects out, there's never enough room to say, leave a phone number. You, we'll ring you up, and if you've got, you know, if you're doing absolutely nothing, then either your emails or the game, which will continue now for a bit. I've got a new game bubbling. Ooh. I think it's pretty good. Yeah, it's based on battleships that the audience will roar again. Give us something from over there, Peps.
This is from David Shand. This is Things You've Broken in Shops.
Aha.
I grew up in Bermondsey in the 70s, and before the Surrey Quays development, if there was serious shopping to be done, Mum would drag me on the 47 bus for the shopping centre at Lewisham.
Yes, of course.
I didn't mind if I could convince her to take me into Beattie's toy and model shop, mm-hmm. but it didn't take long for me to become bored in Littlewoods or BHS. On one such trip in the run-up to Christmas when I was around 7, we took ages. We trudged from one shop to the next, and by the time we reached Marks and Spencer's, I was thoroughly fed up.
At the time, they used to have large, flat, waist-height displays with shirts tightly stacked in that you would comb through for your size and colour. Around the edge, the shirts were contained by metal grill pieces. To amuse myself, I was fiddling with these while Mum looked for a shirt. And then, come on, David, let's look at jeans. But Mum, don't butt me. Come on. Mum, I can't. Don't be daft. That's enough. And with that, Mum grabbed my hand and yanked me from the display. What she didn't know was the reason. You see, I knew I couldn't move. I knew this because I had taken the drawstrings from my coat and tied them in a knot around the metal grill. A knot that I now could not undo. Sure enough, as Mum dragged me away, the entire metal grill piece came with me, and like a rumbling avalanche, the shirt started to shift. What started as a few became a torrent as a wall of 50 M&S shirts cascaded over the floor. The look on my mum's face was priceless. She was actually trying to move in several directions at once. Unsure of what to do. Untie the knot, pick up the shirts, run, or give me a clip around the ear. I think she actually managed all four, but I do know that on future trips, I had to stand 2 foot from any displays.
The toggles, certainly on an anorak, were tremendous fun. Again, before Nintendo, you could make them go all the way one way and then the other, and you kind of do an up and down motion with them, and tying them to things, sucking on them. Oh, man, even right now, I think I might be much more calm if I had the toggle from an anorak to suck on. And what he mentioned there for people who are not particularly au fait or even interested in that part of London was that parade of shops. And across the road from that Marks and Spencer's in the late 60s, early 70s was a shop called the Inn Scene. It was the groovy boutique, easy Marks and Spencer's, but the Inn Scene. And I always like to hear of shops that are the local, either disco or the local good clothes shop in various areas. But it was the Inn Scene in Lewisham. But for years, when I was little, I thought it was called the X Scene because it was written in that kind of lava lamp writing. The N looked just like an X. I thought, what is an X Scene? But it's the Inn Scene. And the reason I labour this point is because it was on a 47 bus coming from the other direction to our friend, by the sound of it, that on one day in 70 or 71, coming from the other way into Lewisham to buy a shirt at the Inn Scene, that David Bowie was sitting on the 47 and had to get off and run back to where he lived, which is the sort of Catford, Beckenham district, because into his head came a song. And this is absolutely true. And he was sitting on the bus and there was a woman in front of him. And he just, this is the true history of this song, from nowhere, he thought, it's a god-awful small affair. And he got off of it and he realised later it was based on the same structure as My Way, but he was on the 47 bus going into Lewisham to buy a shirt at the X Scene.
No.
Yeah, when he wrote, or it came to him, Life on Mars, and he said he had to run back and thought, is this a song? It's one of those where he thought, is this already a song? I realised it's kind of My Way, but he was on the
I
bus.
Never thought,
Yeah, it is. It was his revenge because he wrote the lyrics to My Way and they were rejected, weren't they? I don't know if you know that story, but he did. He wrote, there was a competition to find the English lyrics to a very famous already song. He penned them and it was rejected. And the rest, as they say, Paul Anker and all of that. However, on that, and just quite handily, John Aldington, the great John Aldington, musician, gets in touch. When I was still at school, our band were finishing our set at Bromley Library Gardens free concert, which is exactly in that area, when the star attraction of the day stormed quickly onto the stage and said, do your band know I'm So Glad by Cream? Do you know it? We nodded and started playing it very badly. He sent us a photo of the Bromley Library Gardens free concert stage on that day. He points it himself out. He's on the right. And the picture was taken moments before David Bowie ran on and asked them that. Yes. It was in 1969. Four schoolboys playing covers of current tunes at the time. Bowie and some friends ran onto the stage we were finishing and said, could we accompany him if we knew that Cream song because he loved it. And we jammed with him. We had a reunion last year, not Bowie, the band that is, 50 years on, and we've all dined out on that story. In fact, I'm still doing it. Thank you very much indeed, John. How about that? Oh, he ran on. Do you know Cream? They said yes. And they barely knew it. Something quick from over there, Pepsi, and we'll get out of the people's way.
This is a Hawaiian mystery from AD in Brentwood. On a recent show, you mentioned souvenirs from trips. And years ago, I went on a school trip in Scotland and as a souvenir, bought a giant pencil. About a foot long, an inch thick and a large eraser on the end and completely covered in tartan.
I love those.
After some use, I sharpened it with a small penknife and noticed the tartan pattern was not printed on but paper covered. I started to peel off the paper and saw that underneath it was pale blue. Further peeling revealed bikini-clad ladies and flowers and a beach scene. A bit more, and there, in red writing, Aloha from Hawaii.
No.
My souvenir tartan pencil bought in Stirling Castle. I always now look at souvenir stalls around the West End and wonder what's underneath those Charles and Diana mugs or miniature Nelson's columns.
Well, in the 70s, but if you bought a badge, you could actually peel the badge and there'd be another slogan or face.
No.
Yeah, they're particularly little tiny ones, an inch wide. You could get the old tooth, bite the edge. I don't know if anyone else possibly remembers this. And you could peel the badge off and there'd be another badge underneath it, rebadged, literally. Very last one here is from our friend Willie. He says, I've emailed you because I had someone with the same name once, but he's telling us where he, have you ever lived out a lyric or a film? He says, the first time I ever heard Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street, I was in my car in Baker Street. How about that, everyone? And that's as good a thing to end on, I think. Play the theme tune, Phil.
1, 2, 3, 4. Climb up, come in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away.
In the treehouse,
the fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied as we laugh the day away.
In the treehouse.
Take it away, Danny! Thank you, Wisby. Always, I'm indebted, of course, to my co-host on these adventures, Louise Napoleon Pepper, the great-granddaughter of Ho Chi Minh, Phil Wilding, who's been producing it. But as always, and as you can tell, chiefly yourselves. We'll see you next week.
Next time on The Treehouse. The first thing that scared you. The first thing you laughed uncontrollably at. The first thing you bought with your own money, the first date you ever went on, and the first holiday without your parents.